Many writers explore the agony of growing up, but not many examine childhood quite as brutally and unsentimentally as Julie Oringer. Her first book of short stories tells the tales of a girl whose mother died, a girl whose mother is dying, a girl who feels like nothing next to her cousin, a boy who kills his sister, entire classrooms full of children who ostracize one of their classmates. One of these stories is called Note to Sixth Grade Self. In it, a girl writes down some of the elaborate instructions that she tries to follow in an effort to get through a dance class without being tormented.
At 4 o'clock, go inside with the others. Line up against the wall with the girls. Watch how the boys line up against their wall, popular ones in the middle, awkward ones at the sides. Watch how the girls jockey to stand across from the boys they like. Watch Brittany Wells fumble with the zipper of her nylonless sports sack. Don't let her get next to you with that thing. Try to stand across from someone good. Do not let yourself get pushed all the way out to the sides, across from Zachary Booth or Ben Dusseldorf. Watch how Patricia and Kara stand, their hips shot to one side, their arms crossed over their chests. Try shooting your hip a little to one side. Rest your weight on one foot. Draw a circle on the wooden floor with one toe. Do not bite your fingernails. Do not give a loud sniff. Think of the word nonchalant. Imagine the 11th graders, the way they look when they smoke on the bus. Let your eyes close halfway.
The book is called How to Breathe Underwater, and its excruciating but memorable stories have won wide praise. The author, Julie Oringer, is in the studios of KQED in San Francisco. Julie, thanks for the reading and welcome.
Thanks so much, Steve.
I think that a lot of childhood angst is perhaps in the mind of the child, things that they don't understand. But you write about kids that have had very real tragedies. Repeatedly, your main character will be someone whose mother has died.
Yeah, and this is one of the ways I think that kids are sometimes subjected to the realities of the adult world long before they're ready to be. We do experience loss. We do experience pain that we don't have words for yet. And that's part of the difficulty of going through those years.
You experienced some of that pain.
Yeah, that's true. My mother died when I was 20 years old, after a 10-year battle with breast cancer.
Did that affect things other than your relationship with your mother, even when you went away from the household to school, to out to college, you were thinking about these things?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the deepest effects that it had in my life was to make me very, very close to my younger brother and sister. I have a brother who's 5 years younger and a sister who's 8 years younger. And the sense that we were going through this thing together, this thing that was unimaginably horrible, made us have to communicate and be consistently close in a way that we might otherwise have not.
Can I ask about a story in here called Care?
Sure.
And I just want to very briefly summarize this. It's about a young woman whose mother died when she was 4. Her life is going nowhere. She's unemployed. She's hooked on pills. She's given her niece to look after for the day, and she can't even do that. She gets stoned, and the niece disappears.
Right.
She does find the girl before the end of the story again, but I wonder if you could read on page 141 for me.
Now would be the time to take Olivia back to the hotel, to get her cleaned up in Gail's hotel room, to wait for her sister to be finished with her conference. Tessa and Olivia could both pretend everything was fine, and maybe Gail would believe them. Or maybe she wouldn't, and everything would begin to change. The nightmare that has become Tessa's life might crack open and begin to fall away. Maybe that's what she's been hoping for all day. Maybe that's why she let herself lose Olivia. To make things so terrible, they'd have to change. But Olivia is back now, and Tessa feels almost as if she's been tricked. She feels as if she doesn't have the power to decide anything anymore, as if she's being pulled along slick tracks by a strong and twisted steel rope underground, like the cable car.
Julie Oringer, reading from her book, How to Breathe Underwater. Julie, you have there a troubling story of a young woman, but the most interesting thing to me about that story was that young woman has a sister. Obviously,
yes.
Her mother also died, but she seems to have pulled out of it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that when I wrote this story, I was at a time in my life when the possibilities for a good outcome, a positive entry in adulthood, seemed may be just as likely or equally balanced against the possibilities for a really bad outcome. I wanted to explore both of those possibilities. What would it be like to have this happen at once in a single family? I was looking back on a time when I had recently moved to San Francisco, and I was trying to set up a life alone for the first time. I was in my very early 20s, and that was truly scary.
Did you end up, taking a lot of pills, sharing an apartment with a stoner, you know, like this girl was?
Well, my father just read this collection in its entirety pretty recently. There was a lot that I was kind of reluctant to have him read. He'd read quite a few of the stories, but not all of them, and this was one of them. And he said, I got to ask you, did you, just confidentially, did you use drugs when you were in San Francisco? And I thought, my God, of all the things you could have asked me about this collection, thank God you've asked me the one that I could say no to.
You did worse things. You did other things.
Right, but we won't talk about that. No, I was lucky enough not to have an experience that was like this young woman's experience.
Must be kind of a fine line between mining your difficult experiences of youth for these wonderful creative efforts that you made here and obsessing over the experiences of your youth and getting hung up on them.
Well, I think sometimes fiction acts as a kind of veil between the writer's experience and what's on the page in a way. We're allowed to turn away from what's most difficult, or we're allowed to render it in a form that's distant enough from our own experience that we can look at it head on.
The book is called How to Breathe Underwater. I know that refers to a specific event in one of the stories, but mm-hmm. I wonder if it has a larger meaning for you.
Yeah, that's a great question. When I was looking back at the stories, and I saw this line about breathing underwater from a story called The Isabel Fish, in which a young girl who has survived a car accident and a near drowning is now taking scuba lessons with her brother. And I found this line, soon I will begin to learn what my fish have known all their lives, how to breathe underwater. And I felt like this has something to do with the seeming impossibility of the transition between adolescence and adulthood. We're being asked to take our young selves and move into a completely different social medium with different rules. And if we were allowed to do this gradually, adolescence might not be the incredibly fraught time it is. The problems really arise when the adult world moves toward us before we're ready to experience it, either through sexuality or personal loss or tragedy or premature independence from our parents. And so I suppose I'm amazed that we're able to do it at all. And perhaps, in the best case scenario, this book stands as a kind of appreciation to the people who are doing that as we speak.
Julie Oringer is the author of How to Breathe Underwater. Julie, thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
And that's All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.